I'm Dorianne Wheel. Welcome to Thrive with Dr. D.
Welcome, everybody, to Thrive with Dr. D. When I think of thrive, many things come to mind. We don't want only survival. We want thrival. We want the ability to face our challenges and overcome them and rise above them. And my guest today, Gaynor Young, is the absolute epitome, example, and inspiration of just that. Welcome to you, Gaynor.
Thank you. It's really great being here. So thank you, Dory. Thank you.
Now, Gaynor, I'm sure that many people remember the devastating and tragic accident that you went through when you fell right down a 5-story lift shaft at the State Theatre in Pretoria many years ago. At that time, you were an actress. Your career was taking off. You were literally thriving. You had been in many, many productions and had gained acclaim. And your dream of being on the stage and performing was manifesting absolutely in front of your eyes. You were being sought after and you were really on the rise as an actress. So tell us a little bit about before the accident, the dream and the path that you were following.
Do you know what, Dory? What is just so amazing is the fact that nowadays I can remember not one single instance ever of setting foot on stage in my life before my accident. It's all completely gone. So when you say to me, do you remember your dreams? I don't. All of that's gone. But I do know that I still am a very ambitious person. And so I would have been a very ambitious actor. I know that I loved it. I made so many wonderful friends I still have to this day, which is wonderful. But I'd done Othello, which was directed by Janet Sussman, who came out from overseas. She directed that with us, and there were three women in it, and I was the woman that was playing Bianca, the whore, which, Dory, is quite funny, because at that stage of my life, I was playing a whore, and yet I was very much a virgin. So it was actually so hilarious. And I remember Janet Sussman saying to me the one time, again, I want you to remember how you felt the first time you were taken to bed. And I began to cry. She said, what's on? I said, well, Janet, I've never gone to bed with anybody. So she said, you'll be Gaynor? All right, well, you can use your imagination, can't you? I said, yes, fine. So she said, well, I want you to imagine. I played a very sensuous, wonderful part of Bianca, and that gave me a lot of pleasure.
So maybe just start the story, and you've recreated some of your life through listening to other people, through hearing the story, stone pictures.
Yeah.
But let's start on your journey. So it's really been, more than a challenge. It's been, in some ways, an insurmountable journey. There are effects from the accident. For instance, your memory loss.
Yeah.
And you've recreated some of your life through listening to other people, through hearing the story.
Yeah.
Stone pictures.
Yeah.
But let's start on your journey, first through survival and then to thrival. What happened, Gaynor?
Sorry, after my accident, I spent 7 weeks in hospital, and I can only remember one single day of being led outside by the nurses and being put under the trees because I had a whole crowd of friends every day who came to visit me. So the nurses said it was better if I sat outside where I could see everybody. I knew that I was deaf, but nobody else knew. My parents were only told the day before I left the hospital. The doctor said, I just assumed that you knew that Gaynor was deaf. And Mum said, no, we had no idea. He said, oh, yes, she's a deaf woman.
You had been in hospital for all that time, living inside yourself, being deaf, and nobody knew it. But Gaynor, may you please take us back to the accident and tell us what happened.
Okay.
Because we're interested in how you got to this place from then until now.
Okay. I was the understudy for the part of Guinevere in Camelot, and I had loved that musical ever since I was a little girl. So when I auditioned for the part, I didn't get the lead as I wanted. Kate Normanton got the lead. But I took the part of the understudy for the lead, hoping that Kate Normanton would fall ill. She did fall ill, which was fantastic, okay? And so on the 9th of December, 1989, I was called to go on that afternoon and evening. And I can't remember, but I'm just picturing myself standing in the wings. I must have been terribly excited. I must have been so nervous because I had never, ever had a dress rehearsal. I'd never, ever had a tech rehearsal. Goodness knows why I said that I would go on without ever having had a rehearsal. But I went on without ever having had those rehearsals. And, Dorrie, to put it in everybody else's words, I was fan-bloody-tastic that afternoon's performance, okay? But then, just before interval, there was a blackout on stage. I had to get off stage and change into this wonderful long dress, then come back on stage again. At the same time, at the back of the stage, they were changing the scenery. One scene was going down, and the next scene was coming up. So there was a gap, a small gap, that existed for 42 seconds. Somehow, Dory, I must have mistaken the way that I was turning, because I stepped into this gap. And I fell 18 meters, which is the equivalent of 5 stories, onto hard concrete below. Now, Mum and Dad saw the place where I fell, and Mum said to me again, well, there was only one place where you could have fallen and possibly survived, and that was on that little square of concrete, because she said otherwise there was a whole lot of wires where you would have been electrocuted. Otherwise, you would have been crushed by the machinery. So she said there was one place where you could have survived and you fell.
Oh, I remember that place. So for all intents and purposes, Gaynor, there was not much chance of even survival.
Yeah.
When they found you, almost every bone in your body and your face was crushed.
Yeah.
You then spent, I mean, you were alive from the point of view that you were breathing. You were in hospital a lot of the time unconscious. You came to consciousness. Nobody, well, the doctors knew, but no one else even realized,
yeah,
you know, that you were deaf until 7 years later.
Then, Dory, I then went home to my parents' home in George to recuperate. And that was when, that was when my therapy began. I went to occupational therapy, speech therapy, physiotherapy, and psychotherapy every single day. I mean, I would leave home with Mum at 8:30, and we would return home at about 12. She took me down to Mossel Bay, which is a good 3/4 of an hour's drive away, twice a week, okay, to my therapy. And I wouldn't be as I am today if I hadn't had such wonderful therapy. But, Dory, I wouldn't be as I am today if I hadn't been surrounded by so much incredible love. And that was what pulled me through and made me as I am today, was just being surrounded by so much love.
So, Gaynor, in many times like this, because I seem to remember that actually when you were discharged from hospital, there was very considered by the doctor advice to tell your parents when they took you out there. What was the advice from the doctor at the time?
Well, the doctor spoke to Mum because Dad had to go back to the farm. He was needed on the farm. So only Mum was there. And he said to Mum, frankly, Mrs. Young, if Gaynor was my daughter, he said, what I would do is I would put her into an institution and basically forget about her because, he said, she's going to be unable to do anything other than what she's doing today, which is lie on her back, staring upward at the ceiling because I wasn't able to close my eyes, staring upward at the ceiling, and that is going to be your daughter's life for the rest of her life. I'm sorry, but I would put her into an institution and basically forget about her, because he said there's nothing for her, nothing. And Mum looked at him and she said to him, are you out of your mind? So Mum and I, we left there the next morning. We had to catch an ambulance at 5:30 the next morning, so that we evaded the press. We caught an ambulance back to the farm, and then I began my recuperation on the farm, where I went to all of my therapies on the farm every single day. And Dory, I remember lying there. Oh, you see, now I remember lying there on the farm and thinking, I have to get better. I have to get better because I've got to get back to Joburg. I've got to get back to the theatre world. And that was my main thing, to get back to the theatre world.
So, Gaynor, there's three lessons that you have said, and I need to capture them.
Okay.
The first one was you are here and crediting the love that surrounded you. You're talking about the healing power of support.
Yeah.
Because, you know, right now, going through the challenges that we are going, to have some support in your life is incredibly important, to be able to connect with people, even if you have to be isolated.
Mm.
Your parents, there was no alternative for them.
Yeah.
And many of the people that surround you, and it sounds like there was no alternative for them. Because the thought that you do remember is about, I have to overcome this and I have to get back.
Yeah.
So there was no sign, even at the very, very beginning, when honestly, statistically, things could have been really, really a lot different. There was no sign of anyone on the outside of you or in the inside of yourself that said to you, I can't do this, I'm going to give up. I'm sure that many times on your journey, you were incredibly frustrated and went through a lot, but you were in a direction.
Dory, yes, but you know what? And I am saying this, there are those times where you wake up in the morning, and I remember I used to wake up in the morning and lie there in bed and think, I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to have to face this nightmare of a life. I want it all to go back to how it was. Please, God, let it go back to how it was. And I wanted to close my eyes and return. But there was no way because, Dory, I loved life. And I wanted to enter into life again. So I thought to myself, all right, okay, that means I'm going to have to start to move again. Okay, all right, so I went to physiotherapy. But, Dory, I went to physiotherapy not being able to hear because I hadn't been given a hearing aid yet. So I went to physiotherapy and I thought, I'm coming here because this is to teach me how to walk again. Meantime, the doctors had said to Mum and Dad that they didn't think that I would ever walk again. Now, if I had known that, I don't know what my attitude would have been. I don't know whether I would have thought, oh, well, they say I can't walk again. Well, that's it. I don't think so. I hope not.
So you are now saying that kind of people sometimes live up to other people's expectations and predictions, especially if they're people in authority. So you're saying that it served you well, very well, that you didn't know that these doctors were saying this in the background.
Yes.
It would have influenced you differently on your path. And so you were determined. Of course you had bad days. I think you still do. Actually, everyone does. But, you know, you were certainly allowed with the state that you were in. And so you went through this forcing yourself sometimes, being carried along by your parents and friends.
The message
always to you was, even in the face of feeling hopeless sometimes, just got up and you were very, very determined.
Yeah.
So you started getting better and you started being able to walk. Can you tell us a little bit about the recovery?
Yeah. You know what, Dory? The fact that I couldn't walk or talk, or I didn't even know when I came out of hospital, I didn't know what a knife and fork were and how to use them. So I had to be shown each single thing. In actual fact, Dory, I was like a 28-year-old babe in arms. So that I had to be shown everything. So in learning how to walk again, it wasn't a case of learning how to walk again. It was a case of learning how to sit up, first of all, because I didn't know it. I would slip to the side. So it was a case of learning how to sit up, how to hold your body, and then how to put your feet on the ground and to feel the ground beneath you. So it was a gradual process of learning each single thing. So that I can't say I went to physiotherapy and I learned how to walk again, because no, it wasn't like that. It was far more.
It was learning how to live again.
Yes.
You had to learn everything. Yes. It was learning how to live again from scratch. And there must have been huge frustration along the way.
Yeah.
And you were determined, and the memory of the accident and not even the thought of going back there, but the demon that you had to deal with lived inside you about what happened. How did you maintain the determination to not give up and then to face that demon, which was a huge obstacle to your progress?
Oh, you know what, Dory? I've always been the sort of person that tries. Like, I was a useless tennis player. I was only in the C team of tennis. But I used to hit up against the wall every single day in an attempt to try and improve my tennis. And this is what I'm saying happened to me with my recovery, was the fact that I wanted to be normal again. That was the thing. I wanted to be normal. And Dory, that is still the thing with me, because whenever I see myself, my spasticity gets out of control. I think to myself, Kino, don't, because you need to appear normal. And that is the thing. So I attempt to walk again because I wanted to appear normal. My speech, I was unable to say a word. I remember lying in bed and trying to tell Mum to put the bed down, but I couldn't get the words out. I couldn't speak. So it was learning to speak again. And then getting my cochlear implants, okay, and hearing what I sounded like, I realized, gosh, Gaynor, or you're pronouncing these words wrongly. They sounded terrible. So that again made me attempt to get more normal and attempt to speak more normally. Today, Dory, I still say my S's wrongly. And I think to myself, damn, but that's something that I don't think I will ever get right because of my mouth, yeah.
So you mentioned, I know that there have been many, in fact, appearances, public appearances. You do inspirational and motivational
things. Yeah.
You an author, you know, you've written your bestseller book, A Plunge to Fame. And one of the moments that you've just mentioned now on the journey is that you couldn't hear for a long time. And then you had cochlear implants, which changed your life. What was that like and what happened?
Well, you are asking me what was it like going from a world of not being able to hear into a world where you can suddenly hear again. Dory, what it's like the doors are being opened to life for me. That is exactly because all of a sudden life was open to me again. I was once more able to hear. I was once more able to participate. I was once more able to communicate, and that was the most wonderful thing, you know.
And it was sudden, right? I mean, it was, you recall the experience with you and the therapist, and I think your parents were there, when they were testing whether the operation, cochlear implant, was successful. It was a magic couple of minutes. What happened?
Yeah, it was the most amazing moment, because I'm Jenny Perrault, my audiologist. She was working with me on a computer, and she had attached a hook behind my ear, okay? And she said to me, right, Jenna, I want you to tell me when you can hear a sound. Right, okay. And I didn't hear. Then I said, Jen, I'm hearing a breeze at the bottom of four rugby fields. That's what I said. So Jen just smiled and nodded and clicked away at her keys. Then I said to her a few moments later, you know what, Jen? I can definitely hear a breeze at the bottom of a rugby field. Finally, she said, all right, Jen, this was after 2 hours of her doing this to me. She said, right, Jen, I'm going to press a knob, and I want you to tell me if you can hear anything. So she pressed the knob, and I sat there, and I waited. And I waited, and I waited, and Doris, suddenly it seemed as if the whole world surged towards me with this almighty force, so that I, in actual fact, I was sitting in a chair, and my chair actually went back, and I said the only thing possible to say in a moment like that. I said, shit! And then I heard a voice say, Gaynor, can you hear me? And I looked at Jenny, and I nodded my head. She said, Gaynor, speak. Hear what you sound like. So I said, right. Shall I compare you to a summer's day? Can you hear me? I said, yes, Ma, I can hear you. And Dad was sitting there crying. And I said, Dad, speak to me. He said, well, my girl, what do you want me to say? I said, I can hear you. And that was the most magical instant, was hearing for the first time. And it was amazing, because I remembered, in hearing the sound, I was able to remember that sound from 18 years beforehand. And I mean, I was an actress, and hearing and speaking were incredibly important to me, okay? And to have that taken away from me was the most dreadful thing. I mean, whilst we are speaking of acting, I just wish to say that I had, after my accident, Marilyn von Rehnen had been visiting me on our farm in George. She was sitting having dinner with me, she and Penelope, PJ Powers. And I said to Marilyn, and I said, please won't you tell Mum and Dad, because they don't believe me when I say that I will act again. Won't you please just tell them that I will act?
So, Gaynor, I believe you now. That hearing was an incredibly important one. I want you to tell us about the importance of having to face the fear, and the way you faced the fear with the revisiting of it and going back to the theater.
That's fear. Okay. Dory, because I had had my accident on the upper stage at the State Theatre, the upper stage at the State Theatre was this nightmare to me. I mean, there was no way that I would ever, ever go back there. Then I wrote to ABSA to thank them, because they had set up a donation fund for me. This was just after my accident. So about 25 years later, I wrote to them and I thanked them. And I said, listen, If there's ever anything I can do for you, you must just let me know. And they said, actually, Gaynor, there is. We would like to come down to George and speak to you about it. And they came down and they spoke to me. They then went back to Johannesburg. And I then received a letter from them saying to me, Gaynor, what they wanted me to do was they wanted me to go back to the State Theatre, onto the upper stage, and to say a poem. I said, I read the letter and I couldn't actually believe what they were saying. They wanted me to go back to that nightmare, back to my place of deepest, darkest dread, and say a beautiful poem there, but they're out of their minds. And I burst into floods of tears and I was distraught. And I actually sent a letter to Shirley Johnson. She is another actress, but she's also the editor of my book. And I told her about this and she said to me, Gaynor, I think that this is a very big fear of yours. In fact, she said, I think your greatest fear is going back. And she said, because of that, Gaynor, I think that you should go back. Because she said, I think that you need to conquer that fear.
You took that on. Describe what happened.
Yeah, I went back to the State Theatre and I remember my heart was beating so much as we walked onto that stage. And I walked to the stage and then I looked out at the audience. And you know what? Inside, I felt this deep remembrance happening inside. Like, yes, I know this place. I know this place. And then I was shown exactly where I had fallen, which was, Dari, it was the small, small slit of a hole that I had fallen into. And I said, but wasn't it bigger? And they said, no, again, it was just that. I said, glory. And I looked at it. And then, Dari, then from behind me came the shout, Gaynor. And I turned around. And there was this gorgeous man. He came towards me. And his whole face was wreathed in smiles. This big, big white smile gleaming out of his gorgeous black face. And he said to me, Gaynor, I'm seeing you. I said, sorry, who are you? So he said, Gaynor, I work backstage every night of your show. And he said, I knew you. And he said, I saw you before your performance. And he said, I said to you, good luck. And you said, thank you. And off he went. And he said, then you had your fall. And he said, I thought, this girl, she's dead. I will never, ever see her again. And he said, then I come to work today and I look out onto the stage and I see you. And he said, I think to myself, I'm dreaming. I must be dreaming. But he said, and he put his arms around me and he said, I'm not, because I feel you and you are real. And I said, I am so real. And I said, forgive me, but I don't remember your name. So he told me his name and I gave him the biggest hug. And that Dari, was such a momentous moment for me, because that was part of the healing of going back, was the fact that, hey, Gaynor, you can come back and you can change people's lives, as I did to that man who saw me again. And he said, I thought you were dead, but you are alive. It is a miracle.
Again, or you being there, I mean, obviously such a thing. He believes in miracles now. You know, that common statement of, oh, for goodness sake, face reality. That's not going to happen. You are absolute thriving proof that we can stretch reality. We could create another reality. With the love that you experienced, with the determination that you had inside you. And you've also been able to witness how your life and your journey has become so inspirational to others. See, it was as if a load was lifted at the time. I remember that there was a comment that you said, as you realized where you were back in that place, you stood taller differently.
Yeah.
It was almost the burden made you feel lighter.
Yeah.
And you were there and faced it.
Yeah. Tori, you know what? With myself not going back to the state theater, I was carrying this boulder that was tied around my neck. And this boulder was preventing me from going forward. And by going back to the theater and confronting my worst fear, that boulder was able to be snipped away so that I was then able to stand tall. And I was able to look forward and I was able to move freely without anything hampering me and pulling me back as the boulder had done. I was able to move forward freely. And that is what going back to the theater did for me. That part of the healing, yeah.
Freed you tremendously. Now, not only did you go back to the place, you also started working towards and having the courage mixed with the determination, and I don't want to forget the love, to actually go back onto the stage as a performer. Wrote your book, documenting the story in a very poignant manner. And you, more than that, you actually have performed since then as well.
Yeah, you know what, Dori? This happened, because a man in Fran is a director. She directed me before my accident. She came to the farm and visited us. And I said to her, "Em, please won't you tell my parents that I will act again, because they think that there's no way that I will ever act again." And Marilyn looked at me and she said to me, "Gaynor, I'm sorry. I tend to agree with everything that your parents believe. You will not act again," she said, "because, Gaynor, you're spastic. You can't hear. You walk with a limp." She said, "Gaynor, you will not act again." And that was the most tragic moment of my life, because this was hearing it from a friend, reality. She was a friend. She wasn't a member of my family. She was a friend, and she was speaking the honest truth to me. So this was a very harsh thing for me to have to accept. Then, 4 years later, Marilyn sent me an email and said to me, "Again, listen, I said to you that you wouldn't act again," she said, "and I stand by it. But," she said, "I don't see why you can't perform as Gaynor Young, performing a show about yourself." She said, "And Gaynor, I've spoken to Janice Honeyman, and Janice Honeyman has said, yes, you have got the theater for the month of April." So she said, Marilyn said, "Gaynor, get your script together," because she said, "We start rehearsals in a month." She said, "Because you're going on stage in April." I said, "Em, I can't believe it." I then went up to Joburg and Marilyn and I rehearsed. But you know what, Dori? I found that I couldn't learn words because my memory, it will not retain words. Marilyn took my script and she bunched it up into a little ball and threw it to one side. And she said, "Gaynor, I want you to forget about the script." She said, "I want you to tell me about your life. Tell me." And on that day, Dori, I began performing for the first time. Which means, Dori, that on opening night, when I went out there on stage, I did not know my opening words. I did not know my closing words. I went out each night onto that stage, and I gave a different performance each night, but I knew where I had to stand when I spoke about my childhood, where I had to stand when I spoke about my accident, so I knew my positions, but I didn't know what I would say. So each night, it was nerve-wracking, but each night the audience got a totally different performance, which was, I mean, a friend of mine came and she saw it 3 times. She said, "Kainal, each time I saw a different performance. It was wonderful." So that, and Dari, that was a wonderful thing for me, was performing again. And Dari, what just blew my mind was the fact that every single night that I performed, and I performed for 6 months, every single night I got a standing ovation, which just blew my mind, because I'd never ever had a standing ovation before when I was an actress. But I got it after my accident. Yeah.
And you could actually feel, it was palpable.
Yes.
You could feel the magic that happened there. The audience,
yeah,
were connecting with other,
yeah,
through what they were witnessing from you. And they were applauding the show, but they were, of course,
yeah,
applauding the view. People went back again and again and again.
Yes.
And 6 months is a really, really long time. And so I'm sure you were very, very proud of yourself.
I was.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that wasn't the only show you've done then. You've done another show.
That was in 1994. And 10 years later, Merlin said to me, "Gaynor, hey, come on, time for your next show." I said, "Great stuff, Em. What about?" So she said to me, "Kainal, listen, you get writing, my girl, because we have to fill people in on what you've been doing since last you were performing." And so my next show was called Gaynor Rising. And it was all about myself after my accident and the funny thing that used to happen to me. And it was really a wonderful show, and I performed in Johannesburg, and then I moved to Cape Town, then I went from Cape Town to Durban, then I went back to Cape Town again, and then I ended. Yeah.
So you have documented this journey for many, many people, but you've also documented it for yourself. It must have been therapeutic for you on all of these transitional steps along the way, the determination in the beginning, the cochlear implants, the taking your first step,
yeah,
for the first time, embracing, and the joy of you know, seeing your family around, the facing the demon on stage, the performing, the writing of the book, and now you write a blog, don't you?
Yes. I write a blog every 2 weeks, which is wonderful. But then again, you see, writing now, before my accident, I used to write wonderfully. Writing now, I have to search for the word, because the word is in my brain, and I know it's in my brain, but I can't work out whereabouts in my brain it is. So I have to search and search, and finally, after much searching, I finally think, yes, that's the word discover. That is what I wanted to say, discover. So it takes me ages to write 10 lines, will take me a whole morning. Whereas before my accident, I used to be able to write 3, 4, 5, 6 pages, you know.
What makes you do it? I mean, you've really overcome, you've moved from kind of almost near death to survival, which was, it was like being trapped in your own body. Your parents didn't even know what was going on with you. And then, you know, you went to survival, literally to thrival, which is the name of our show.
Yeah.
You're in a place now where I want to say to you, if it's so difficult and the writing takes you such a long time, what makes you do it? Can you just sit back and say, I've earned some stripes, why am I putting myself through this? What makes you do it?
It's a case of life, loving life, and wanting to put the best out that you can into life, so that by putting the best out, I find I get the best back. That is what I found, Dori. I found that by giving, you actually get 10,000 times back, more back. So I will continue to give to life, because life gives back so much, and it has given me back so much the whole way through my life, before my career, after my accident. What I put out has been given back so much more, so that I am an incredibly blessed person. Yeah, that is it. I'm blessed.
Sure. You're, it's an amazing attitude that isn't just an attitude, it's action. It's the way you think, it's what you believe. It's the action translated into steps and into your destiny. Now, as you know, just to end, one last question. Thank you for sharing this phenomenal and inspirational story. As you know, we are in a time of not only a health pandemic, but also a mental health pandemic.
Yeah.
What started out as just 3 weeks of lockdown has turned into a marathon. We talk about having to adapt to a new normal, but we don't know. There's so much uncertainty. Like, you went through so much uncertainty. Many people don't know what the future looks like, and people don't even know when the future is. Now, I would love to know, through your experience and what you went through yourself, what would you like to say to people who are just on the verge now of giving up? They might have lost a job. They might have lost money. No, there's a lot of global mourning that is going on now. There's also global meaning. People are finding meaning in this. But the way that you not only kept going, but gain or rising, really rising above, what can you say to people who are feeling in this place now?
You know what? I would say to people what I say to myself every day. Don't give up, because life is what you make it, and life can be wonderful in spite of us being engulfed in this dreadful situation that we are in now. By giving, by living, life can be wonderful, as long as one continues, I think, to give out. So don't shut yourself off from the world and think to yourself, oh, this is dreadful, it's got the better of me. Don't do that. Don't do that. Rather, go and see a friend, or go for a walk and look at the flowers. Life is wonderful, but we are in a bad situation. But that bad situation is not what life is about. Life is about so much more. Life is about life.
Gaynor, thank you very much. You know, you maintained your vision. You maintained your hope. You maintained the belief in yourself. You embraced what other people gave you. And now you're giving so much back. This message for all of us is just a huge reminder of enormous and unbridled possibility. And you epitomize that. Thank you so much, Gaynor Young.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm Dorianne Wheel. Thanks for listening to Thrive with Dr. D, a Jackpod podcast.